Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Joseph.
And I'm Nick.
And this is Fish Jelly.
Yes. Yes, it is.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. We're not together right now because I'm out of town. And you're sitting in my usual spot, but it looks good on you. That's fine.
Merci beaucoup.
How was your evening?
It was great. How was yours?
Okay. Did you go to 80s night?
I did. And then I left that for the Eagle. It wasn't, it was... The dance floor was brightly lit, and they installed some kind of monitor where they were playing all kinds of Akbar stuff. And then I didn't bother to look this up, but all the napkins at the bar had some message on it. I think it's changing ownership. Like it was sold to somebody else.
Well, maybe they'll redesign it so it has better flow.
Tear out that bitch of a bearing wall and put a dance floor where it ought to be. Yeah,
really. Well, did you see that someone was arrested and charged with the murder of Tupac Shakur?
You had mentioned that. You'd read
so,
that.
So, of course, 26 years after the rapper was shot and killed, which happened on the Strip, after a boxing match at the MGM Grand. And I was going to school at UNLV at that time. And you know, UNLV is behind the MGM Grand. So I remember being on campus that night and like this huge commotion. And of course there was no social media or anything. So, but you know, you could see that there was a lot going on. And I remember we kind of like tried to drive over there a little bit, but.
Of course.
So, I mean, it's a very memorable incident to me, but then also like Tupac was such a great artist. And I feel like had he not been murdered, he would probably have a pretty prolific acting career.
Well, yeah, I think he was just. He was in so many films in 95, 96, 97. I mean, yeah,
he had so much. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, he would have been. He definitely would have been a leading man.
He had so much like charisma. He was so handsome. He looked great on screen, and I thought he was a talented actor.
He was. He was.
Yeah.
What was that one we talked about recently? Gang related.
Oh, which if people. You have to watch Gang Related. That story is so out of control.
In which he plays a cop, which is kind of funny. And then Layla Rahsaan looking really good in that movie. But
yeah, she looks fabulous. But anyway, the person who was charged is this 60-year-old man named Dwayne. I think his nickname is Keefe D. Davis. This dummy wrote a book back in 2019, like a tell-all memoir, and then did all these interviews. Basically saying he was in the car when Tupac was shot. He says he wasn't the one who shot him. So he's charged with being an accessory, like aiding and abetting the person who did kill Tupac. So the actual murder has not been charged, but you know, he's saying that he won't tell because that's like street code. But yeah.
Well, just don't say anything at all then, sir, but okay.
Well, just so stupid. Like, your ass gets hemmed up for running your mouth. Like, you're running your mouth anyway, but...
Right. I might as well just tell everybody everything. I don't know.
Ugh. Well, I did... there is something in the sorry to this man section, because last week when we were talking about weddings, I said I had only been to three, but that's not true. It's at, right after I published that podcast, I remembered that we went to the wedding of a good friend of yours in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I felt bad because it was such a lovely wedding and I totally forgot. But yeah, so I've actually been to four weddings. But you know, if anyone wants to invite us to a wedding, you know, for a fee, you can, I'll make an appearance.
I mean, well, yeah, weddings are not fun. I don't love weddings. That was a lovely experience seeing close friends getting married. And I remember at that particular one, I was asked to read a poem out loud when you were out there laughing in the audience.
Well, it was fun trying to see you be, anytime you're like trying to be serious, and because you also get very, you're very, you get stressed out very easily, even though you do a good job every time you have to speak publicly. But so I think that's why, well, at that point I hadn't really seen you do anything like that. So I think that's why I don't recall laughing out loud, but.
No, but I could see your little face out there.
I was just happy.
Yeah.
But
something we don't hear you say.
Really ever, no. But yeah, there's a YouTube video of us. Someone asked us to help them. A gentleman asked us to help him propose to his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And she watched our channel. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, way back in the early days.
Yeah. But we can move on to films released we didn't cover. The Kill Room.
The Kill Room, I think, which is being released courtesy of Shout Factory, directed by Nicole Payone, whose previous film I have seen, Friendsgiving, which I didn't like, but has a really unique ensemble cast. And her latest star, Samuel Jackson, Uma Thurman, and Maya Hawke, who of course is Ms. Thurman's daughter.
Oh. Paw Patrol, the mighty movie.
I mean, I've seen this marketed everywhere. I had no interest. Directed by Cal Brunker, who I think did the last Paw Patrol movie, which I'm not familiar with anything regarding that.
Fair Play.
I did watch this. I was going to write about it, but sadly, time got away from me. I believe it's a debut Chloe Domont Netflix film starring Alden Ehrenreich and Phoebe Dynevor, who I wasn't familiar with, but she's known for Bridgerton, I think, which I have not watched. Kind of an interesting modern take on gender equity in the workplace that gets a lot messier than you'd expect it to.
Mommy Wata?
Yeah, Nigerian, I believe, directed by CJ Fiery Obasi. And I think it won an award for cinematography at Sundance this year. But that sounds really interesting. I was kind of surprised that you passed on this one because it sounds like it's worth a watch. The kind of a bizarre tale, something to do with mermaids. So I might catch up with that later.
Muzzle
is directed by John Stahlberg Jr. And it looks like, you know, you're kind of like back in the day when we say direct to DVD trash, but it stars Aaron Eckhart and.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. About the dog. He's like a canine police officer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I passed on that. Lastly, Saturn Bowling.
Oh, this was at Locarno in 2022, I believe. I've referenced this before because I reviewed it for Ion Cinema. It has a rape murder scene that made me stop the screener because I like needed a break.
Oh, wow.
Directed by Patricia Mazwi. Yeah, very, very violent, hard-hitting thriller. And she's worked with Isabelle Huppert before. I think she's about to do so again. But yeah, and I was, based on her previous work, that was unexpected.
Moving on to projects of interest. Quo Vadis, Aida, the missing piece.
Yes. If you'll remember in my top 10 of 2020, Quo Vadis, Aida by Jasmila Jibanic was in my top 10 of the year. Also a very depressing, grueling film. But apparently she is making a follow-up to this. So more torture.
Something called Jupiter.
A favorite Russian filmmaker, Andrei Zhivagintsev. I don't know if I've shown you any of his films, but I like Leviathan. Elena might be my favorite. The Return was, I think it was his debut and won the Golden Lion, I think, in Venice in 2003. But he's finally doing a new film. I think his last feature was Loving in 2017, something like that, which I actually could rewatch. I like that too.
An untitled sci-fi project by Arthur Harari.
Arthur Harari, who I didn't realize, I know he wrote the script for Anatomy of a Fall, which won the Palme d'Or at Cannes this year, directed by Justine Triet, but I didn't realize he's married to Justine Triet. He's written several films, and I think I haven't seen his last feature, which won a bunch of stuff all over the festival circuit, Onoda, 10,000 Nights, which I think opened in a certain regard in 2021. But yeah, he is directing his third feature, which is an untitled sci-fi project, and it's tipped to star Léa Seydoux, which, you know, is exciting to me.
And lastly, we received a message about something they thought you'd be interested in. So I was reading the article they sent, and I saw that this information was actually provided by Eric Lavallee, who runs Ion Cinema.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whoever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Begone's latest film. That's been, I that's not exactly new news, like to me. I've known about that for a minute. But yeah, it'll be his follow-up to Long Day's Journey Into Night, which is an excellent 3D film from 2018. Of course, not related to the famous Eugene O'Neill play, which a version of that is coming out with Jessica Lange, by the way, soon.
Oh. Movies we watched for fun. Poison for the Fairies.
Yeah. I watched this last night. It's kind of a Mexican horror classic from 1986, directed by Carlos Taboada. Very bizarre film, kind of like a mix of The Bad Seed and Diabolique, but it's got this residious little girl who believes she's a witch, being raised by her Nana and her creepy old grandma that can't do much. And she, this new girl at school, arrives, and she convinces, I think the new girl's name is Flavia, that she's a witch, and she kind of indoctrinates her and kind of terrifies this little girl and wheedles her way into going away on a family vacation. And the title comes from fairies are the nemesis of witches. So she's like, we have to come up with a poison for them. And then she manipulates this little girl to such a degree that her little friend burns her to death.
Oh, geez.
And it's got this score that's like, if you were just listening to the score, it'd sound like something like Pippi Longstocking or Anne of Green Gables. But
I haven't thought of Pippi Longstocking in a long time.
She was just referenced in Clueless.
She was?
Paul Rudd tells Alicia Silverstone that because she's got pigtails and she looks like Pippi Longstocking. She doesn't know who that is.
Oh. Next, Strangers in the House.
I just read this novel by Georges Simenon in anticipation of watching this new restoration of Strangers in the House. It was adapted 1942 by Henri Descoings, with a screenplay from Henri Georges Clouzot, starring Rému. It took me forever to read this book, like way longer than it should have, because it's quite slim. But I think the initial premise is good, but then it becomes this courtroom drama that's a little too familiar, I think. But it's basically about this lawyer who hasn't practiced law in 20 years because his wife left him, and he just sits in his old mansion and drinks wine every night. And he's got a daughter that he basically ignores because she reminds him of the mother. But anyway, one night somebody gets shot in his house, and it turns out his daughter's been having these parties in one floor of the mansion that nobody knows about. And this homeless man gets killed there. And then he ends up defending his daughter's lover, who's the accused.
Mm. A few nights ago, you put on Crow the Salvation.
Uh-huh. It was
the sequel to The Crow. This shit was terrible.
It was very bad. And stars, I guess, Kirsten Dunst has top billing. And I remember this, I think it was a direct-to-video release, but Eric Mabius, who I think the only other film I really remember him from is Cruel Intentions. Terrible. But part of it's not his fault.
The script. No, because, yeah, oh gosh, there's so much, well... Like, he's a very handsome man, but then when he turns into this, like, the Crow, I guess, because we see that he was electrocuted, so his face looks like cooked meat, and then he peels it off, and then he's left looking like a sad clown, combined with his hairstyle, which is that very, like, late 90s center part. He looks ridiculous.
Yes, and then the film insists that nobody really recognizes that it's him.
Oh my gosh, and then no one recognizes, and he's like, he's a very good-looking man, and like, no one recognizes that he's the person who was convicted of murder. It kind of was, the story reminds me of that, I think it's Wes Craven, Shocker?
Yeah, with Peter Berg. Mm-hmm.
Except...
That's not good.
In that movie, he's like sadistic and, as people would say, evil. This guy wants to clear his good name. But yeah, I almost want to, I didn't finish this movie, so I might put it on.
It's caca. But Fred, if you like Fred Ward, and then of course William Atherton is in it too, who you might remember as the evil EPA representative in Ghostbusters.
Hmm. Next, after we watched the secret movie for today, we decided to put on Dominion, prequel to The Exorcist. This film has an interesting history.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the few Paul Schraders I haven't seen, and it kind of what went down and how it was made and distributed was very fatal to his career for at least a decade. But it's not, I'm not going to say it's very good.
Because he made this film and then the production company didn't like it. So they stopped him and then let someone else make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Who was that?
Benny Harlan.
And then they released his movie and then that shit bombed. So they decided to release this one in limited theaters. But the funniest part of this that I think is so shady is originally after they told Paul Schrader, we're not going to help you finish this movie, they were going to make his movie a bonus feature on Rennie Harlan's DVD.
Yeah, isn't that shit?
That's real shitty. But then from the reading I did, Dominion prequel to The Exorcist, Paul Schrader's film was better received.
Yeah.
And the person who did The Exorcist, William Friedkin?
The author, William Peter Blatty.
Oh, I'm sorry. The author said that he liked Paul Schrader's to a degree, but he hated Rennie Harlan's. This movie, Dominion prequel to The Exorcist, is just boring.
It is. It's too long. And
it's too long.
You don't really get into any kind of demonic bullshit until, what, an hour, 15 minutes, really?
Like the third act, but then it's kind of like it's poorly done, kind of. I mean, we were reading that they didn't have money to finish like the special effects, and so it looks kind of bad. The possessed character is giving me like old girl from Stargate and the Crying Game. Like it just felt very.
Yeah, his initial introduction is creepy, though, because he's wandering around the periphery of this dig site with that little stanky leg. And
the crispy wing arm.
and Satan must Satan offers a better healthcare plan. He heals this young man.
He does. He really does. But this one was not a joy to sit through.
It's not. And I don't, Stellan Skarsgård is interesting enough. I just, it would, it, I can see why, because the distributor was some kind of small, I forget, Millennium something, not Millennium, but kind of like Lion.
It was like Magnolia Tree or something crazy.
Magnolia Tree. But it's clear, it's not, it's clear to me that they wanted something else, not an art house style psychological horror film. And well, Schrader was trying to be, pay homage to the original.
See, that's interesting. Well, I mean, I can appreciate why the people financing it were not happy, because when you think The Exorcist, you think like creepy possessed girl. And then, yeah, we get this art house, almost like historical drama with this possessed character that's kind of interesting. But yeah, it turns into, it almost felt like sci-fi towards the end.
Yeah.
Next, you watched Paris by Night.
Yes, directed by David Hare, his second film after Weatherby, which I haven't watched Weatherby in years and years and years. But this stars Charlotte Rampling as a European MP who gets hemmed up in, well, she kills somebody in Paris at night, riding in cars with boys. And but I love Charlotte Rampling, obviously, but Michael Gambon had died a couple of days ago, and he was in this as her husband, and they don't have a very good relationship. It was okay. You saw the end of it.
Oh.
He shoots her.
Oh, that was actually good. It felt like a marriage. I don't know. Just kidding. Two Deaths.
Also, Michael Gambon. This is a Nicholas Rogue film I'd never seen, from 1995, starring him and Sonia Braga. Very dark, depressing movie, but it's set in an unnamed country. I think it's supposed to be Romania. That's the collapse of communism, and there's basically a revolution going on, and people are being shot by the military in the streets. And meanwhile, this doctor has a dinner party with friends, and through the course of the evening, they learn lots of really terrible things about his obsession with his maid, who apparently is an indentured servant, basically, because he's agreed to care for her lover, who's incapacitated after a car accident, for the past several decades in exchange for the use of her body. And then it turns out one of the reveals is, of course, that he was the one that ran down that her lover in the street so he could have her.
Dang. You watched something called Due, D-E-U-X.
Due, as in the number two.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But with Isabelle Huppert. I'd never
seen. Oh, is this the one where you posted on Instagram her getting attacked by a fox?
Yeah.
That shit looked crazy.
The film is very, the film is incomprehensible, but it's by kind of the unloved child of the new German wave, Werner Schrader, who's very, very homosexual. Several of his films I've seen kind of, it's what you'd expect from him, but it is the second time he worked with Huppert, I believe, who's previously stored. I do like Malina, his Ingeborg Bachmann adaptation, which is also a very challenging film. But this is, Huppert is, as the title suggests, playing two people, twin sisters named Maria and Magdalena. And it opens with them learning about each other. One lives in Portugal and one lives in France. Now that I say it, it's not unlike what happens to the twin boys in Dix, the musical. But Schrader, I think, has said that this is autobiographical. I don't know how or in what capacity. And there are all kinds of intersecting stories involving these two women and Boule Ogier playing the mother. It's interesting, especially if you like Huppert, and has some very odd, bizarre, fun moments. But I don't know. You'd have to be in the mood for this, for sure.
You watched Mulholland Falls?
I know it's not a well-received film. Lee Tamahori from New Zealand directed it. It's a 1940s film noir that's basically based on a real-life group of cops called, I think they were called the Top Hats or something, that were kind of running the city basically. But Nick Nolte is the headliner, and he'd been having an affair with, he's married to Melanie Griffith, who's nominated for a Razzie in this. And I don't love Melanie Griffith per se, but I don't know why. I think they were just trying to be mean to her that year. She's not even in it long enough to even care. But anyway, he's been having sex with this woman who's found dead out in the desert. And it has to do with the nuclear testing sites going on. Anyway, I thought it was very dull.
You watched I Like Bats.
I Like Bats. This was odd. It is part
that
of...
makes me think of I Like Totals.
Same. Yeah.
Or who says I Love Bread? Or
isn't that from Crank Yankers?
Or am I thinking of Matt Damon? Or like, I want to go to Hawaii. I don't know. Anyway, crazy. I Like Bats.
I Like Bats is part of the House of Psychotic Women collection.
Is that the one with the lady who pushes the van down the road and it explodes?
Mm-hmm.
Looked really cool.
Some really great visuals. It's basically a vampire movie about this woman in Poland. That's also strange and very playful and looks great. I'm going to butcher his name, but it was directed by Gregor Warchal, who is probably better known as an actor because he starred in some very notable Krzysztof Kieslowski films, including he's part of the cast of the Decalogue and also the Three Colors trilogy in the white segment. But if that is a great collection, I've been waiting to show you the one starring Elizabeth Taylor, The Driver's Seat, based on a book by Muriel Spark. I haven't watched it in years and years, but
there's a scene in this movie where I think it's the lead character. She's at a bar and she approaches a man seeming like she's a prostitute, I think. Mm-hmm. And she's like, girl, I'm gay. And she gets mad. And he's eating food. He's at like a restaurant bar and he has a plate of food. And she gets mad after he tells her, like, you're barking up the wrong tree. And she pours his drink in his plate.
mad. That man ends up falling in love with her. But I think he's implied that he's gay because he's like, girl, I'm not interested. Bye.
You watch Talk Radio?
Yeah. what did we just watch Eric Bogosian in? Oh, and Reptile. He is the police chief.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd never seen, this is his shining hour, because he wrote this play that was shortlisted for a Pulitzer, I believe, and Oliver Stone adapted his play. This was Stone's follow-up to Platoon, and I'd never seen it. And it's basically about what do you call those radio hosts?
A DJ?
Like Howard Stern.
A disc jockey?
Yeah, but what do they call them? Like it for the vitriolic ones.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
You do know.
I'm typing in words to see if there's a word that comes.
There's a word. It's like...
Well, why don't you continue and I'll research.
Anyway, it's about this man. He's about to be, I think they're in...
Oh, shock jock.
Shock jockey, yeah. I think they're in Texas and he's about to be offered a national syndication, I believe. And it's basically him talking to people all night and being, saying things, some things that I didn't disagree with, but kind of... Well, he gets a lot of hate, and so he's just basically bitching at people all night long. It's interesting. Ellen Green plays his ex-wife. I thought it was good. It was compelling for however long the running time is.
Excess baggage.
Because we'd watch Reptile, I've completely forgotten about this movie, but I'd never seen the previous pairing of Alicia Silverstone and Benicio del Toro, which was the ill-fated Excess Baggage.
Oh, that's right.
Directed by Marco Brambilla, who I don't think's directed a feature film since then, but prior to that, he did Demolition Man, I believe. But this was no good. It's not a good film.
Blood and Chocolate.
This is also trash. Starring, I never thought Agnes Bruckner was very interesting, but is this werewolf girl who works in a chocolate shop in, I think, Bucharest, and is romanced by Hugh Dancy, who's this graphic novelist who had to flee the United States because he assaulted his father, and there's a charge out for this. Was, oh, it was garbage. It was boring and it was stupid. And this is, it predates Twilight, which I think is interesting because this film was not a hit. But I feel like if it had come out maybe in 2009 instead of 2007, more people would have maybe been interested. But it's directed by Katia von Garnier.
Then, oh, JFK.
Yes. Speaking of Oliver Stone, catch up week. Pretty impressive. There are a couple parts that I think are a little hokey, such as Ed Asner like beats down Jack Lemmon in a scene that does not play very well, but pretty
and all of the accent work.
The accent work is not good. Kevin Costner feels like he's in a satirical production of Tennessee Williams' play. Like, it's
And then the, because who plays gay? Kevin Bacon, Tommy Lee Jones. Tommy
Jones, Joe Pesci.
His eyebrows and wig, because he's supposed to be gay as well, right?
Yeah.
I think they did them so crazy. Tommy Lee Jones looks crazy. Jones looks like Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, he looks like the albino and Morgan Freeman. And him kind of being mincing is entertaining, but Joe Pesci, there, he's supposed to look raggedy because there's a woman in the film that says, oh, this man has eyebrows, he looked like a buzzard.
A buzzard.
Stone has since revisited, he made a documentary in 2021, I think, that I'm eager to watch as well. But yeah,
The Long Farewell.
I got to see a restoration of this at the Cinematheque last Sunday, a Kira Miratova film from 1971. This would be like a great Mother's Day film, but it's about a mom whose son hasn't told her, and she kind of finds out by snooping that he's planning on leaving to go live with his father. And she's kind of devastated by that. Beautifully shot. It's Kira Miratova. If you could have a chance, I highly recommend it.
Something called A Silence.
Yeah, I think I'm supposed to write about this, but this just played at the San Sebastian Film Festival, the latest from Joachim Lafosse, Belgian director, who I think works a little too much, too frequently. Although I'd be eager, I haven't seen it since 06 or 07, Private Property starring Isabelle Huppert. Is probably my favorite of his, but his latest stars Emmanuel DeVos and Daniel Auteuil, and it's very bizarre. It's about Daniel Auteuil is a lawyer who's just been kicked off a very high profile case because his brother-in-law has filed charges against him for raping him when he was a young man and living with them, his sister and her brother-in-law, and then her teenage son has also been influenced by him because it turns out Daniel Auteuil is also, they found like kiddie porn on his computer, and his teenage son has also become kind of fascinated by that. It's mired in all kinds of bizarre things that are worth unpacking, but as a film, I thought it was just okay.
I watched a movie called P2, like Parking Level 2. It's a 2007 film. Have you seen that?
I have not. That's directed by Frank Calhoun, who did the Maniac remake, which I've
That's right. I thought it was very good. It's a horror thriller film. It stars Rachel Nichols, who I'm not familiar with, and Wes Bentley.
Uh-huh.
I thought Wes Bentley was really good because he's handsome, but also looks a little like crazy and kind of creepy, and I thought the lady Rachel Nichols did a really good job, and the story is so simple because it's one of those like they're kind of isolated to like a building, and I thought it was like pretty suspenseful, and there's some pretty gruesome stuff in it. Basically Wes Bentley plays a security guard in this building that Rachel Nichols works in, and it's Christmas, and she's like the last one to leave, and she's having car trouble. And we find out that Wes Bentley's character is obsessed with her. And then she has to fight her way out of this building. Yeah, it was really good. Then I watched that movie Vacancy, that other 2007 film that I always cite as like
creepy. Mm-hmm.
Creepy because it could be real. It stars Kate Beckinsale and Luke Wilson. It's about like this remote motel where there are people there who make snuff films. And this married couple, Kate Beckinsale and Luke Wilson, kind of get trapped there and have to fight their way out. Upon rewatch, I still think it's a very good example of something that's creepy, but I don't know that I like all these horror films where they always have like a character or like this couple, they have all this like baggage and trauma, like a dead kid. And I don't, that always feels like fluff. Like, well, we spent the first 30 minutes with these two people fighting with each other to then get stuck having to fight for their lives. It feels a little basic, but.
That's Nimrod Antal, the Hungarian director.
Yes. Unfortunately, there are entries in the obituary section. Like you already mentioned, Michael Gambon died.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
what do I know him from?
I mean, well, probably nothing because you haven't seen The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover yet. But he's probably best known for playing Dumbledore in the original Harry Potter series. But he wasn't the first one to play Dumbledore in the only Harry Potter you've seen, Chamber of Secrets. It's Richard Harris who died after that film. So then he and Michael Gambon inherited him and played him for the rest of those cycle of films.
And then Dianne Feinstein died.
Also, she was 90, I think, yeah.
So she used to be the mayor of San Francisco and then became a senator for California. I mean, as someone who was born and raised in California, she's been a part of my life since I can remember. But, you know, in recent years, her health was failing. And then there are all these, like, images of her, like, just looking like she has no business working, which of course calls into question, even like looking at Mitch McConnell, like, are these people like mentally fit to do anything besides sit their asses down and relax? But yeah.
You can destroy people's driver's licenses. Yeah. Like,
right. Yeah. They wouldn't even be allowed to have a driver's license. What y'all doing up in here?
Mitch McConnell.
But I believe Dianne Feinstein is, like the longest running senator. She has a distinction, but
she's going into Strom Thurmond territory. I Annette Bening played her in, was it The Report with opposite Adam Driver?
Oh, our secret film today was inspired by an upcoming release. It is the 1973 American supernatural horror film, The Exorcist, directed mm-hmm. by William Friedkin. Rest in peace. We decided to watch this because the new Exorcist we're seeing like in a couple of days.
Yep. Directed by David Gordon Green. Funny enough, The Exorcist Believer comes out the same day Showtime is releasing Friedkin's last film, The Caine Mutiny Court Martial, which I saw at Venice and loved.
The premise, the funniest premise we read for this film or that I saw was, I think it was on Amazon Prime because we watched it through your AMC subscription, but it just says like a young girl gets possessed. That's the premise.
This film that changed the landscape of cinema and horror films in particular. Yeah, like that's all they could offer.
That's all they had. IMDb says, when a young girl is possessed by a mysterious entity, her mother seeks the help of two priests to save her daughter. I mean, I think this movie's excellent, especially considering that since then there have been so many like possession type movies. And I think the reason The Exorcist works so much better is because it's not trying to do anything extra. Like,
Well, yeah, storytelling wise, it's pretty straightforward. For most of it, it plays kind of like a familial drama, really.
Well, because I think what's, I don't believe in ghosts and demons, but I think, so that's why a lot of modern possession films don't work for me. And then a lot of modern stuff, they try to give it like a horror angle, like jump scares, and it just feels like, okay. But in The Exorcist, I think the fact that it's not trying to play up anything like horror, but also I think that the thing that's most creepy and frustrating is the mother, played by Ellen Burstyn. Mm-hmm. So here's the story. Ellen Burstyn is this famous rich actress who is raising her daughter Regan alone. Is it Regan or Reagan?
Reagan.
Reagan's played by Linda Blair, of course. The father is like out of the country. He's not really involved with the daughter. And Reagan starts acting weird. Her mother doesn't know what to do. Of course, she can afford to have her see all the best medical doctors. And when they can't help her, she seeks out the help of a priest. And then that's where the exorcism comes in. But what's interesting is the priest is a trained psychiatrist. He's also a medical doctor. And he's like, girl, don't nobody do exorcisms anymore. Like, that's not a thing. The Catholic Church is not going to sponsor that. But then when he sees firsthand that this little girl is the devil, then we have another priest come in, played by
Max von Sydow, who opens the film in Northern Iraq.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. The opening of the film, we're in Northern Iraq, and we see that this priest, I think his name is Father Marin, he's like on an archaeological dig, and someone finds like an artifact. And once Dr. Marin gets it, like weird things start happening. But then we have the connection is that this demon inside of Reagan seems to react very negatively to Marin, like it's scared of Marin. So they're like, well, bring his ass in. So then the other priest is played by
Jason Miller,
who's the father of Patrick Miller.
Jason Patrick.
But those two basically fight off this demon. But this demon inside of Reagan ends up killing Father Marin. And then in a last ditch effort, the other priest, who I keep calling Dimmy, because that's what his mom used to call him.
Damien Paris. Mm-hmm.
He, at the final moment, grabs Reagan and is like, take me. And I thought that was really creepy because you see the demon leave Reagan and go into him. His face changes, which actually looks really good for 1973. And then that demon causes Dimmy to jump out the damn window and break his neck on that famous stairwell.
Mm-hmm. Who's the second narrative death on those stairs.
Yeah, we'll get to it. And then the end of the film is Ellen Burstyn and Reagan like, well, I guess we're going to move. Like, all's well that ends well.
Well, they're just visiting Georgetown anyway, because she talks about how she's having a house built in L.A.
Oh, sure.
They're always going to leave. But
what I was going to say is I think what's creepiest about this story is the frustration we see in the mother, Ellen Burstyn, like, I don't know what to do. And I think that's why this is so effective. Like, mm-hmm. especially in modern films, they always either try, like if it's set in the past, then there's always like some very clear history of like, oh, this is a demon, this is how we get rid of it. Or if it's modern time, then they are on the internet trying to look up things and, oh, this portrait is of this demon. And everything is always so spelled out. And in this movie, it's like, we don't know what's going on. Like, as the audience, we know this little girl's probably possessed, but watching the mother be so frustrated. Was Ellen Burstyn nominated for anything?
She was. Miller, Linda Blair, and Ellen Burstyn were all nominated. It was the first horror film nominated for Best Picture. Blatty won for Best Adapted Screenplay, from his own novel. But yeah, what's funny is thinking, this film has such a legacy. It's weird to think that the studio didn't like the cast because they were all not really notable then. So, you know, Ellen Burstyn previously had been in the Last Picture Show, but she wasn't a name yet.
Well, I think they're all deserving. Even Linda Blair, like, I know I've seen her in things since then, and I don't think she's a very good actor, but I think as this little girl, like the physical acting was very impressive.
And of course, she's voiced over by Mercedes McCambridge.
Oh my gosh, the sound editing is so good. But I'm just going to go through my notes. You were telling me that Rick James wrote the song Cold Blooded for Linda Blair.
Yeah, he did. I like that song too. And had no idea till very recently that was supposedly about her. Yeah, what an honor.
Yeah. So the first time we realize that there's something wrong with Linda Blair's character is her mom, who's a very loving mother. She's like just, you know, visiting with her daughter in their house, and they're in the basement, and the mother grabs a Ouija board. And she's like, girl, what's this Ouija board doing in here? What you know about a Ouija board? And Reagan's like, oh, do you want to like play with it? And they set it up. And the little device that's used to like move over the letters kind of like flies into Ellen Burstyn's hand, like unexplainably. So of course it's like, well, what is that? And then Reagan starts talking about, oh, Captain Howdy did it. So like right away, it's like, oh, this is not good.
Mm-hmm. And then when Ellen Burstyn wakes up one morning and Linda Blair's in bed with, Reagan's in bed with her, and she's like, oh, my bed was shaking, I couldn't sleep. It's like,
oh. That was so creepy. Then I think to add to the frustration of Ellen Burstyn's character, the dad is not a part of the picture. And we get a scene because it's Reagan's birthday. Ellen is trying to like, she's called an operator to try to get a hold of the dad who's in some hotel in Rome, I think. And she is going off on this operator, which I thought was so funny. Then Ellen Burstyn's character has a party, like a dinner party. And the director of the film she's working on shows up. Who's that actor?
Oh, I have to look.
He was a hot ass mess. He was in there saying some weird racial shit, I think. And then,
well, no, he was trying to press the buttons of her butler, her wait staff, by
who's German.
Yes, and he kept saying that he's a Nazi, and
yeah, like just some crazy shit.
And I'm Swiss.
Yeah, but the butler gets fed up and strangles his ass. And then Ellen's like, you need to go. But that director gets hemmed up later because once Reagan's possession is in full swing, the assistant who works for Ellen is like watching over Reagan, but she has to leave to go to like the pharmacy. So she asks this problematic drunk ass director, could you watch Reagan? And the next thing we know, he's gone. But then we find out that he was actually... Or later on, he gets killed by being thrown down those stairs.
Yes, and he actually, that's Jack McGowran. He died in 1973 from influenza.
Oh, but even that death is interesting because a police detective shows up and he's trying to figure out, like, there's no way, like, the way he flew out that window... Like someone would have had to like do it. And the only person in that room was Reagan, and it couldn't have been her. So he's asking Ellen, like, no one is in this house. Like, I thought that was very well done.
Oh, and then I like the lead detective. That's Lee J. Cobb from 12 Angry Men. He's also in a pretty good cheapy noir called The Man Who Cheated Himself. That's worth watching. But
he was very good because he's looking at Ellen like, we have questions. You don't seem to have answers. I don't know what to do. I thought he was very good. But at the party, Reagan comes downstairs and there's an astronaut at the party. And she tells that astronaut, you're going to die up there, like going up to space. And then this little girl pees on the rug.
Yes. And that has ties to another Blatty book, The Ninth Configuration, which was also made into a film, I believe, with Jason Miller. I could rewatch that. I've only seen it once and it's been years and years and years.
This film the screenplay does such a good job of like character development, because I felt like I understood Ellen's position. I felt like Father Marin, like we get his backstory, you know, like, and then Damien. his mother is like senile and has to be put into a home. And so we get scenes of her I thought pretty emotional scenes, because he's like having to reckon with needing to put his mom away. And then of course she dies, and then he's having visions of her. And actually the demon possessing Reagan is using that against him. Like we see Reagan talking as if she were the mother. I thought that was all very effective.
I think that's what a lot of films get wrong, is they cut too many corners. Like you kind of have to lay the groundwork for the payoff.
Yeah.
Because we spend an awful lot of time in medical facilities in the early half of this film with a doctor played by Peter Masterson, Mary Stuart Masterson's father from the Stepford Wives. And just having this little girl having to go through all of these tests and all this, like the CAT scan scene.
Oh God, when she's getting that CAT scan, it sounds like she's at a shooting range. Then when the doctors come to the house to visit her, and I forget if it was like the bed shaking or her body going up and down like a mousetrap, and they're looking like, we can't do shit for you.
Like, whatever, and they're, yeah, we still think it has something to do with the cerebral blah blah blah, and it's like, okay,
but it makes sense, right? I mean, as scientists, as medical doctors, like, I mean, you have to find an everything has an explanation. It can't be like a demon. So I thought that was all very well done, especially for 1973.
But I like how the two doctors are finally like, have you tried a priest? The Catholics do exorcisms. It's, you know, it might be a placebo, basically.
You know, they are at their wits' end when they're like, girl, you better go get a priest. And then Ellen in the conference room with all those doctors, I just kept thinking, it must be nice to have money.
Well, yeah, she's this world famous actress. Like, imagine Angelina Jolie having to deal with a possessed child.
Right, right. I did have a question, because is it that the artifact that Marin finds in northern Iraq, don't they find that at Ellen's house?
I think Lee J. Cobb finds it at the bottom of the stairs.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure. And that's related to Pazuzu.
Yes. Which is Exorcist 2 or 3?
Pazuzu. Exorcist 2. Oh my God. Well, we probably need to rewatch that, which Linda Blair returned for. And... your memory, but Louise Fletcher has this one outfit where her little breasts are out, and it looks like there's the two little straps over her breasts. It's a really ugly dress. And then, of course, Richard Burton is hamming it the fuck up.
The version we watched, I don't recall seeing Reagan walking down the stairs backwards, like on her four appendages.
No, it wasn't in that version. I think that might be the director's cut, because Friedkin was forced to cut 12 minutes, I think.
Oh, so we didn't watch the director's cut. But what's the most disturbing scene in the film we watched the other day is when Reagan is stabbing herself in the vagina with a crucifix, and like she's all bloody. And then she tells her mom to eat her, and then shoves her mom's face into her bloody vagina, and then slaps the shit out of her mama. That was all too much for me.
Can you imagine audiences seeing that in 1973?
Oh, yeah. And this little girl talking real nasty and loose. Ugh.
And a bunch of kids saw this movie. You know, this scarred a generation, because all these, I think the rating... I was reading that there, like, lots of children saw it because it should have been rated X, supposedly. And part of that might have been a stunt to recoup the budget, because it went way over budget, and there were a lot of problems during filming, and a lot of deaths and accidents. I guess it was considered a cursed project.
Other creepy things are Reagan's talking in this demon voice, and it's unintelligible, and it's being recorded, and then a sound engineer ultimately plays it in reverse, and then we realize that Reagan is not speaking Latin or some other language. She's just talking in reverse. That was creepy. Then we discover that, like, on Reagan's abdomen, it looks like the words "help me" have been carved in there. I thought that was creepy. But when Father Marin shows up, he shuts shit down. Like,
yeah,
it was very effective when he shows up. Like, okay, time to get some work done.
Oh, do you want some background on the demon? No. He's like, well, I think three of them. He's like, no, there's only one.
Yeah, I got it from here. Don't worry about it. And then a very famous scene, I guess, is, you know, the power of Christ compels you. And I know this movie is so good because normally shit like this makes me laugh and roll my eyes. But in this movie, I'm like, damn.
Well, right, because I don't share any of the same beliefs.
Right.
So it's still effective.
Oh, gosh. So in northern Iraq, in the beginning, we see that Father Marin is like standing face to face with this like demon statue on a hill. And then at the end, he sees that same figure in Reagan's room. I thought that was super creepy. The Father Dimi seeing his mom in the bed, that was really creepy. But yeah, this movie is super, super effective. The only thing that kind of, well, there are a few things. First of all, if I were that assistant or that housekeeper, child, after that first thing, when I saw that girl going up and down, it would have been time to find a new job. And then Ellen Burstyn's leaving her assistant alone in that house with that possessed ass girl.
And when she says goodbye to Sharon, we're gonna miss you. It's like, ugh.
And she goes, are you sure I can't change your mind? You don't want to come with? She's like, no. Hell no, bitch. I'm not going anywhere with you. But the other thing that I didn't quite understand is I don't understand why Father Dimi wanted the demon to take him.
I think I always saw that as he felt bad for this little girl. And also he's kind of got nothing else to live for, is how he's made to seem with his mom dying. And even leading up to his mother dying and him talking to his boss, is that he's done. He's exhausted. He's basically suffering burnout.
Sure. Right? Sure. That makes sense. But it wouldn't have been me. Like, and is he getting paid to do this?
Yeah. And the church is paying him, but
it's not enough. It can't be enough.
Well, it's not enough. They don't pay him enough because there's a lot to be said about, remember his, I think it's his uncle that has the mom put in, you know, like the cheap people's hospital, because she's with all these other, like in a psychiatric ward. And he says some comment, if you'd been a lawyer instead of a priest, you know, you could afford to care for your mother the way she deserves. And
I hope Ellen Burstyn gave those two priests some money, like paid for their funerals or something. Three people died fooling around with Reagan. I do not understand how she's not in jail. That little girl needs to be in jail.
Well, mm-hmm.
There needs to be, if someone wants to, you know, instead of whatever we're getting next week with the new Exorcist, this movie, there should be a new movie about how Reagan has to go to trial.
I'm not looking forward to David Gordon Green's take on this, but I am, as I said before, very happy to see Ellen Burstyn has returned. Although, as I understand it, she asked for a lot of things that she's been wanting. So,
well, good for her.
Come back, including some kind of scholarship or fund for young actors that she wanted to establish. I think that was part of her deal.
Yeah.
Learning, because she said she's always, every time they do an Exorcist movie, she's been asked to return and she says no.
What is your relationship to this movie? I remember watching it as a kid with my sister in maybe like 1980, like seven, maybe, like we were like 9 and 10 years old, maybe. And I remember being so scared. And I remember watching it with her again, I believe, in like 98. So scared. And then I know I rewatched it with you in 2010.
I had a movie night for it in 2008. And then you and I watched it again in 2011. And then I watched it. Thanks, Letterboxd, but I watched it again in 2018. But so I've seen it several many times. But I came to it kind of late because my parents were fair weather Christians, kind of. But they had the mentality that if you let something like this in, you know, you're leaving yourself vulnerable. So this was not a film watched in my house, even though we watched some gutter shit. It's funny how people pick and choose looking back on what their kids can see, but.
Right. I can't watch. Well, I'm trying to think of a gay movie and I can't right now. I can picture my, like my dad saying like, we can't watch some simple thing, but then we can watch Friday the 13th. But
okay. So in fact, like I remember watching Demolition Man with my dad, but it's like The Exorcist, like, okay. But I rented it with friends around the same time. I remember, when I started having sleepovers at my male friends' houses, I went ham, like, oh, let's rent. And they would always get annoyed because I always wanted to rent this old shit, like Rosemary's Baby and The Omen and all that devil shit I can't watch at home. And that was how I saw it. But I don't know that I actually really took it in until, like fully concentrated on until I had that movie night in 2008. But I've known many people that are obsessed with this film. At that particular movie night, we had a friend over who had a pug named Captain Howdy, for instance.
Oh, well, you can tell me later. So what would you give The Exorcist?
I think I gave that a 5-star. I think that might be a 5-star film for me. Or 4.5, maybe.
I would give it 4.5 out of 5. It's a classic film. Yeah.
You just saw The French Connection for the first time. This was Friedkin's follow-up.
That was really good.
And you've seen The Boys in the Band and Cruising.
Yep.
So I'm not trying to convince you that he's one of the best directors that has ever lived, but, you know.
Well, I mean, from what I've seen, I would believe it. So that's all we have for The Exorcist. We're watching The New Exorcist this week. We're seeing a couple of horror films.
Yeah, there's a Pet Sematary prequel.
Oh, Pet Sematary prequel, VHS 85.
Another possession movie where evil lurks or something that we'll be watching when you get back.
And then the poll for our next live video will be Sigourney Weaver B-sides.
Yeah, I need to send you that list.
So you need to send me that. But that's all I have.
Same.
All right, ta-ta for now.